Yo, welcome back to season 2 of Techish. We're back. I'm Michael Behane.
It's Abdesi here.
Abdesi with a slight cold.
Yeah, sorry. My voice is recovering, but I'm 100% here.
But that's the dedication that we have to our audience, that we came back.
I know. I'm really excited for season 2. By the way, thank you for doing the special episode without me.
Is that sarcasm? What do you mean?
I'm so sad that I missed it.
I know. To be fair, I was like upset that you weren't there. Genuinely, I was like, it would have been better.
We just need to have her back on the show again when we're both here.
Yeah. So Arlen Hamilton, to be mention who it was.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Arlen Hamilton of Backstage Capital and of the Gimlet Startup podcast series, which was dope.
Yeah, it's awesome for us that she decided to come on, like, and it's a real cosign that we appreciated. Yeah, listen back to the episode if you haven't listened to it just yet. And
I mean, clearly you're one of the most important tech podcasts on the radio right
of
now.
All time. All time. You know how we do.
That's us. Just cash.
So we're both back. We've both been on holiday, two separate holidays. Abedesi's been in the motherland, Lagos, Nigeria.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was so good. I want to go back.
Tell us more.
It was hot. It was humid.
Have a slight tan.
Thanks, bro. It was just good to be, you know, back with my people and not be like the only brown face in the room. It was quite funny because I went with my partner, Ben, so he became the only white face in the room.
Oh, Lord.
A nice little role reversal there. But yeah, no, I loved it. It was actually incredible to see how much Lagos has changed since I was last there. Like,
which was when?
2006.
That's a long time. Yeah, things can change.
So yeah, we got an IMAX now. We got like food trucks, like, you know.
That's dope.
We're developing. And the tech scene's amazing.
Oh, did you check out the tech scene?
I was able to just like chat to a few people who are making things happen in the community, which is really cool. It must be said that we probably need to get more consistent high-speed Wi-Fi across the city. I think once that happens, it'll be a lot better for everyone. But it was still cool to see people using social media to either advance their own entrepreneurial ventures or just like, you know, critique the government, like speak out for progress and speak out for change. There are a lot of really exciting things happening. And I think, especially with the way politics is going around here, it makes me think about what will happen as I get older and whether I'll, you know, be more interested in launching ventures over there than over here. Because sometimes, which we've spoken about before, it can feel quite hostile as a person of color trying to, you know, make a successful venture over here. And sometimes I think once you go over there, the barriers that you face here totally disappear. Now, that's not to say that you don't then face new obstacles.
Other barriers, basically, right?
But they're ones which are probably, like, you know, less emotional and, like, less tied to your self-worth. So it really got me thinking, actually. And I'd be curious to hear how other people in the diaspora feel about that. Because, yeah, I've got some friends from Asia, for example, who've launched ventures here and are now thinking...
In the UK?
Yeah, here in the UK, in London, who are now thinking, oh, you know, I'm just going to go back to Southeast Asia because I can leverage my network there. So it was a really, really, really good trip. I want to hear about your trip.
So I was in South America, a few places for my 30th birthday. Yes, I'm old. And
you're younger than me.
Yeah. And so I was in Argentina, Peru, and Brazil. And it was a quick whirlwind tour in 2.5 weeks. And now I'm back. That's about it, really. I don't want to bore people.
I feel like you were gone for ages.
Yeah, it did feel like a while.
It's because I see you every week. So when you're gone, I was just like, oh, where's Michael?
And we literally haven't seen each other, like, in this intervening time. People might think, oh, yeah, they hanged out. Like,
No,
this is the first time I've seen you since the last episode that we've recorded.
I know.
So it's a catch up as well as a, you know, new episode. But, okay, let's, I think... I don't want to bore people with our personal lives, so let's get popping with winners and losers.
Well, the winners this week definitely start with the Carters, Mr. and Mrs.
The Carters. Have you listened to the album?
So I listened to that first track as soon as it dropped on the internet. I was like camping in the countryside and I streamed it. Like I found 4G, got it up. And I like from the second the video started playing, I was like, they've killed it. They've killed it on the art direction, on everything. Also, how do they keep it a secret?
Yeah, I think somebody said that I want Malia Obama to have the same team that Beyonce has because there's never any leak. I saw that on Twitter. You know Malia Obama, every time she's at uni, like somebody's, oh, here's
it's a so
picture
true.
Of her smoking and like with a boyfriend and it's like just mad snakes around. Like, and
for
they
sure.
got a tight team. Like,
I think they must have even filmed some of that content while they were here in Europe on their tour.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, Jay's got the same haircut, so I'm guessing it's same throw, like, so I'm guessing it's this thing. Did you listen to it on Tidal, or did you stream it on YouTube? What did you do?
So I just streamed it on YouTube because
the video.
So I only heard that one track so far. I don't have Tidal. Is that bad?
No, it's all right. I don't have that either. And we're meant to be the conscious woke consumers. Like, we ain't got Tidal. We're not supporting black business.
Yo, man, I'm entrenched in that Spotify ecosystem.
Yeah, Spotify's got me.
The thing is, like, I saw this funny tweet, and it was just like, the Tidal users are comprised of Jay-Z, and Jay-Z's like thousands of incognito tabs. And it's true that, like, anecdotally, I do not know that many people who have a Tidal subscription.
Yeah, none.
I mean, I know people that got it for, like, the Beyonce album, Lemonade.
They'll get the free, like, I don't know, however many months
to get
free.
It's like 1 month trial.
1 month trial, spin up the album, and then bye, ciao, see you later. Nobody's signing up, basically, right?
So what does this new surprise album by the Carters, aka Beyonce and Jay-Z, mean in terms of like cultural impact for black couples, black marriages, black communities?
I'll let you take that one.
No, because there's been a lot of chat about, you know, reconciliation and forgiveness.
And the fact that
there's already a very well-known narrative around Jay-Z's cheating on
Beyonce.
Infidelity,
right?
Yes, exactly. So we had the songs in Lemonade. And what people were saying is that They are grateful for the fact that they're working through this in a public forum to, in a way, show that, you know, it can be done and show that.
And also,
you know,
monetize their...
I was going to come to that.
And also monetize their drama. Like, let's not get twisted.
This
is basically like really high-end couture, like Shade Room stuff. Like, instead of just being on the Shade Room, it's like, we're going to do it in our albums and it's going to be limited release only on our platform that we own. And we're going to monetize the hell out of it. And more power to them. Like, I think what it says about, you know, black love, black couples, whatever. I don't think it says anything apart from what's going on within their relationships. Mm-hmm. I don't want to extrapolate this and say it means anything on a grandiose level. I don't have that kind of...
Ooh, well, the Beehive might beg to differ with you there.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of them haven't really forgiven Jay, though. A lot of the tweets that I've seen about the Beyonce album is kind of like eye roll about that Jay's on the album.
Mm.
And people are grateful that Jay's pretty much only doing like a couple ad-libs here and
there. Really?
Yeah, like people. I don't think people have forgiven Jay. Like, and do I blame them? I don't know, innit, man. I'm not going to... throw stones at Jay, but like I found it interesting though, like how so there's a line on the album that I found that I'm gonna quote. Yeah, and obviously we're tech-ish, so it's kind of semi-tech and semi-cultural. So it's like Beyonce says, patiently waiting for my demise because my success can't be quantified. If I give two fucks about streaming numbers, would have put Lemonade up on Spotify. She's very shocked at Spotify, and she's basically saying here, like, listen, all these streaming numbers, you can miss me with that. You can't quantify what I am, basically, right?
Wow.
So I was talking about this. I recently guest appeared on Rice at Home, which is a business podcast that's also higher in London. Like, shout out to them. And we were talking about the whole streaming wars and whatever. Like, and just to go on a quick tangent, I was like, when I was at uni learning about business, we were told competition is good for consumers.
Yeah.
Right. That's what we've been told. So here we have now where... we have a fragmented market now of multiple stream platforms and the consumer's kind of been screwed.
Yeah.
Don't get twisted, because I'm not signing up for three or four platforms. Because if another big artist is like, I'm setting up my own streaming platform. If Drake's like, I'm setting up my own streaming platform called Drizzy-fi, for example, right? Copyright that name. And and he's like, only my shit's going to be... I'm not signing up for it.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? The only person I would have done it for is Michael Jackson, but he's not here no more. So,
Kesara. I think, like, you're absolutely right. When we talk about competition being good for consumers, we're... thinking of things like price, right?
Yeah.
So obviously more competition drives down price, but what we forget in that model is things like exclusivity.
Yeah.
So what happens when you, as the supplier, in this case the creator, the artist, can say, I will exclusively provide this material to you, to your one platform.
Yeah.
Then we are screwed, because it's like, well, I've already like invested in this, and it's SaaS. It's software as a service.
Yeah.
I'm renewing
it's a recurring
every
model.
Month.
Right.
Now you're gonna force me into having another recurring payment every month just to listen to one album? Like, seriously?
It's crazy. But actually, you know what? Breaking news.
Mm.
When I was on my way to the studio to record here, my friend said, actually, they've just released the album on Spotify.
Rejoice.
I was listening to it. That's how I was listening to it just now before we get started to record. And I like the album so far. It's dope. But on a business level, it's like, have they kind of just kowtowed and just gave up and said, you know what? Despite what the line I just quoted from the album...
Yeah.
I think maybe they've succumbed to pressure, and it's like, we can't actually do this where we've got only our stuff wall gardened on this platform, and like millions of our fans are not going to be able to listen to it. And if they do, they're just going to pirate it. I pirated 444. Like, I'm keeping it 100.
Oh.
I'm a Jay fan, but bro, like, I'm like, what more do you want from me? Kind of thing, right?
You're bootstrapping.
I'm bootstrapping out here. I ain't got VC money. know what I'm saying? So
I think if your whole image is about how you put the community first, to do something like release it on the platform you own and then deny people on another platform the opportunity to listen to it, like, that's a contradiction. You can't be the two things. Yeah, definitely.
Depends how you view community, though, because you might say, listen, I'm doing ownership right now. Mm. And all of our artists have been historically screwed over, if you're going from way back to, like, way back in the day till now. And he probably sees the small amount of money that artists get from Spotify as a continuation of that. So he's saying, I'm about ownership. I'm giving all the quote-unquote black artists ownership here. And even if you sign up to Tidal, like Kanye and all the artists that originally did sign up for Tidal, they got a percentage of Tidal.
Right.
And there was actually a bit of beef between him and Drake in the sense that Drake refused to sign up for Tidal as an artist and went for Apple. Apple offered him 20 mil cash up front. Damn. Whereas Jay said, listen, and he said this in a few bars, like subliminally, like, I was about giving you 2.5%. And I think people worked out that that 2.5% would have been worth more than the 20 mil. So it gets really like...
Theoretically
speaking, if they ever exited. But they had an investment from Sprint. I don't know these American companies. Yeah. They invested in Tidal and the valuation would have meant that 2.5% on paper was worth more than that 20 mil up front.
Theoretically
speaking. I mean, but we work in tech and this whole thing is all paper wealth.
Like, yeah, but I take 20 million cash from Apple.
Up front, right?
I mean, come on. What would you take? You're going to take the equity?
What
if there's no capital event?
Yeah.
Jay-Z has no incentive to liquidate Tidal. Man's loaded.
No, he took investment and they took the cash injection. So I don't know whether that was money just taken off the table or whether that's money reinvested back into Tidal. We don't know. That might have been given back to the shareholders.
Is there any evidence to show that artists that signed to Tidal from now will have better deal than Spotify?
In terms of payout
per
though.
Play, payout per stream?
They get more per stream, yeah. Okay. So
but I mentioned the audience is smaller.
The audience is smaller,
so
that's
overall,
correct.
So overall revenue is likely to be smaller.
So if you get payout per stream more, but then you have equity ownership, that's an enticing deal. I'm not going to lie to you. To me, that is quite enticing. But I agree with you because my personal life, on a much, 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 much smaller scale, if someone comes to me and says, I got this app I want to build, I'm not going to pay you. I'm going to give you equity, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying yes. Like, I'm like, give me the moolah. I want the cash right now, man. Right? Because there's no guarantee.
Like, equity don't pay my rent.
Exactly, right? But then if I'm in a position where I'm already, I don't know, I've already got 100 million in the bank.
Yeah.
And somebody credible like Jay-Z comes to me.
Yeah.
I'd have to consider it. If Elon Musk, okay, I know we bring this guy up all the time, but let's say Elon Musk came to me. Mm. I've got this business venture. I'll give you equity versus if some like other person was like, I'll give you 20 mil. I'd have to seriously consider it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's difficult. What do you think?
It's
hard. You're taking the money, right?
I mean, In that specific example, I'm like, I don't disagree with Drake. I think it made sense. One of the things that I want to ask you is more around like the quality of the content that's being created. So you've heard the album. I've only heard one track. The track is okay. It's not fire.
Yeah,
didn't have that great video, I'm not sure I'd like it as much. So I want to hear from you. Is it a solid album?
You know
Rate it out of 5 stars.
I can't do that because I've literally just heard it on the bus over here. In this era, I was so quick to be like, it's a classic or it's a dead thing, like after like it's been out for a day. So I got to sit with it for a little while. But what I heard, I liked. What I heard, I genuinely liked. And I'm a Jay fan. I'm not a Beyonce stan. I like Beyonce. I think everybody likes Beyonce to a certain extent, like if you're alive and got a pulse. But it sounded solid to me. I was glad that they put it on Spotify and I wanted to hear it.
Because like what I want to know is like, is there just going to be an album every time they have some kind of life event? Like Blue Ivy's first day of school.
Why not?
Like Joy album. Like...
Why not? It's a whole new world now. It's a whole new model. Like they own their own platform. Like why can't they?
I guess
you know, and they've got direct access to their consumers. Think about it. Jay has access probably to all the email addresses, hashtag GDPR, but he has...
I'm dead.
Hashtag GDPR. And that actually happened while we were away.
Yeah, it did.
The mailbox apocalypse, that was crazy.
Oof.
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
Painful memories, yeah.
So he's got access to, like, I don't know how many subscribers they got. Let's say they got 5 million subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
He's got 5 million email addresses.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Convert
that's
that into a concert ticket mailing list.
Yeah, that's powerful. Do you know how many artists... have no idea who their consumers are.
That's a good
if
point.
You buy my album on
point.
iTunes, I don't know who you are. Ryan Leslie, also a musician, he released an app that was like meant to fix that problem where you could have access to your actual consumers and know who they are.
Yeah.
And you would sell your album off your own Shopify website as opposed to iTunes.
Nice.
So that you would know who they are, the location. And then when you have a concert, you can retarget them and say, right, okay, I've got 1,000 fans in Ireland.
Yeah.
With these are the email addresses. I can go do a concert there.
I like that.
Whereas,
that's smart,
right? But Jay's got that in abundance. He knows where everyone is and who's listening to what. And that kind of data is powerful. Like, so people are sleeping on this Tidal move. Like, it's really smart. But whether it's good for anybody outside of Jay and Beyonce, I don't know. Like, I don't think he's given that data to like anyone that's on Tidal. Do you see what I mean? Like, what was the question? I've lost track, actually. I've gone on a...
It was the content quality.
The content quality so far to me is dope. And I like, for 444, they had like videos for each track. I think they've done that with Lemonade as well. And maybe even stream exclusive like concert. Yeah. I think it's a good idea. I think somebody has to do it. Like, and I respect that Jay is trying to do the whole full stack, to use the technical term, like as a control. Production, concert, distribution. It's pretty smart.
Maybe Kanye's trying to do that a little bit as well, because he had that whole...
Let's not talk about Kanye. Do you know how disappointed I am in myself? Because you know how that whole Trump thing, I was like, I'm boycotting this guy.
Yeah.
I caved, didn't it? So I was like, let me listen to this album, because there was too much noise on social media.
Of course, man.
Yeah, I caved and I listened to that album and against my own principles. And it wasn't even that good.
It was all right.
That's so annoying.
It was all right.
If I'm going to compromise my principles, at least let it be a classic.
Yeah.
I was like, it's not even a classic. Yeah, like...
But you don't know until you listen to it.
I know, but like the way... Oh, man. I'm disappointed in myself, man.
You caved in.
I caved in. I was like...
Yeah, but you can delete it now. Yeah, I have
on Spotify. I can't take the streams back. I can't take them streams back. Damn watch.
Maybe he'll invite you to Wyoming next time.
Oh, hell no. Would you have gone?
Hell yeah,
you would have gone.
Man, I'd be like, yo, college dropout.
You would have came dressed as that teddy bear, like from the first original album.
I'd just be there with the sign, flashing lights.
Oh, my days. You really would have gone. After all of the whole Trump thing, if Trump was there, would you have gone?
Yeah, why not?
You would have gone.
Yo, man, you give me 5 minutes with Trump, I'd take
it. What would you have done?
You think I wouldn't take 5 minutes with Trump?
To say what?
I don't know. I'll grab his phone and just start sending some tweets. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Hashtag Techish. Yo,
Secret Service will dash you down real quick. They're not playing around, man.
But like,
probably for us in an immigration detention center as well.
This now goes on to like a Twitter thread that we were doing last week. Gosh, my voice, I'm really sorry. Talking about like whether you would take an MBE or an OBE or something like that, right?
Oh, Lord.
I'm not saying we go into it, but let's explain to the US audience what that is. Okay, yeah, so for people listening outside of the UK who aren't familiar, every year the Queen releases an honours list. And these honours basically award the people who have brought, you know, great achievements to society. It's an acknowledgement that you've reached, you know, the peak of your game, the top of your game, and they're awarded to people across arts, media, science, technology, business, etc. Now, they all make reference to the empire, because things like MBE is like member of the British Empire. And
So there's the OBE, which is Order of the British Empire, which is kind of like third. Then there's like MBE, member of the British Empire, which is second. Then the ultimate accolade is knighthood. You become a sir.
Yeah.
That one doesn't reference, you know, empire, but you're no longer a Mr. or Mrs., you're a sir, right? And I think it's similar to like the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It's that kind of level where the highest person, the head of state, gives you an award and says, you've killed it.
Yes.
So yeah, go on. So what you tweeted out something that's interesting.
Natalie on Twitter, as Natalie is online, who's like big person in the tech world and a lot of stuff around like inclusion in society in general, started a really interesting conversation around this. And then we had like Alex Fafega of Kamuzi Labs and AI Lab here in London chiming into the debate. A bunch of people across social media started talking about it. She was making the point that she doesn't understand why high profile black people of African descent have accepted these honors, given the fact that they are so intrinsically tied to the empire, which, you know, oppressed us, oppressed our ancestors, and the legacy of which is still creating inequities you know, for our communities today. So the point that I made was like, okay, if it wasn't called OBE, MBE, like if it wasn't linked to the empire, would you take it? And the point that I'm trying to make is we need status to make change, we need influence to make change. And sometimes in order to reach that level, you have to be in a room with people you don't necessarily like and don't want to associate with. So for example, when you're asking me something like, oh, would I take 5 minutes with Donald Trump? Like, you know, the man's a misogynist and he disgusts me, if I'm honest. Like, he'd probably try and grab my pussy for all I know. But at the same time, you know, is there an opportunity, like, you know, is there an opportunity speaking to literally the president of the United States to, you know, say something, make a point, and create that soundbite that infiltrates his mind?
Okay. So, but going back to the MBE, OBE thing, are you conflicted about it, basically? So
yes, I am conflicted about it.
Would you accept?
Because...
would you be MBE? And we know an MBE, actually. We had an MBE here in the studio.
Yeah, we did.
We did. And we never asked her about
Sharma
it.
Dean Reed.
Like, yeah, right. And
this is how I feel about it. Like, the longer I go on my entrepreneurship journey, the more I become aware of capitalism. And I think it's all good and well to, like, have values and pontificate and all this stuff. But, like, I just want to change stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to change the world for the better.
Mm-hmm.
And I only have X years on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that the symbolism of not taking it has less impact to make change than actually taking it and then using that title to build the network, create more opportunities, raise the profile of the work that I do. That's where I feel right now. That could change.
But I think it's a strong case. I understand. Like, if you're an MBE, you have, you know, a lot more influence to change the world in the direction that you want to do. It's whether how much does it go against your spirit, like, to have, you know, a member of the British Empire attached to your name. I'm conflicted on it also. I don't know if I would accept it. I would like to think I wouldn't, to be honest. So Benjamin Zephaniah, who's like a famous British Jamaican poet, or Black Britain poet from Birmingham, he turned it down, and he wrote an open letter in The Guardian saying, this is why I haven't accepted it. There's another lady, I've forgotten her name. She's like a journalist of Indian descent. I've forgotten her name. She's a really prominent woman. I'm so sorry, I forgot her name. She accepted it and later on regretted accepting it and sent it back. Yeah, I think after the Iraq War.
Oh, interesting. So I think Wole Soyinka, Nobel laureate from Nigeria, also rejected it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have rejected it. I mean, it's, you know, so Benjamin Zephaniah said he's also an anti-racist campaigner, and he has, you know, lobbied at the time Tony Blair, the government of the day, for many anti-racist campaigns, and he got ignored. He got airtime. They didn't respond back to him. But then he gets a letter from the head of state saying, we want to give you this award. And it's like, well, why are you not acknowledging me on the issues that I care about? But now you want to co-opt me and say, listen, look how diverse we are, right? So it's very difficult. Yeah.
Because another point of conflict I have is this, like, I don't believe that the Queen is racist.
I don't know.
I mean,
but it's not about the Queen personally. It's about what she represents.
Okay, fine.
You see what I mean? It's not the Queen. I'm sure the Queen, I'm a Republican. I don't believe in the monarchy, but I have nothing against the Queen personally. I'm sure she's a lovely woman, right? But what does she represent?
I don't know.
I mean, the royal family, I was reading Black Britons. It's a book about the history of black people in Britain, right? And like, the royal family, like, were the first investors in the slave trade. And it's never been an apology. You see what I mean? Like, and that money has been invested and reinvested and compounded. Yeah. And the wealth of this nation has been built upon that.
Yeah.
So the counter argument you can make is that we are existing in Great Britain. The greatness of Britain, Great Britain, comes from the fact of the empire. That's where it came from. Great Britain.
Right.
Rule Britannia. Britannia ruled the waves.
Yeah.
All of the institutions, the universities, everything that exists here has been built upon plunder, slavery, theft, and obviously some ingenuity and capitalism and all the great things,
America.
Right? So, like, for us to even say, we don't want this part, but I'm existing and trying to thrive in the rest of the economy and society and go to the institutions. I've been to UCL and all these universities, right? Am I being a hypocrite? I don't know.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because where do you draw the line? So, for example, like, Natalie is at Oxford University now, right? She could have turned down a place at Oxford University.
Yeah.
I could have turned down a place at London School of Economics.
Yeah.
We went to boarding school here in the UK. Most of our teachers were white. Our syllabus was written by white people. I don't know if being British today and the British royal family today still stands for empire. I personally don't
feel
that it
does. So why do they have it in? It's in the title. That's
because
the problem.
It's tradition. I mean, I'll talk about some Yoruba traditions, for example. In my culture, on my Nigerian heritage, you know, mothers aren't supposed to be at their children's funerals. And there's like a lot of, you know, discourse around this right now because people see it as unfair, as unjust. Some people still, you know, kill twins because it's seen as an evil omen. There's always going to be some kind of lag between, you know, dropping traditions which no longer make sense, but also equally hanging on to them because they're so entrenched in our identity.
But you know what the thing is, I don't know the situation in Nigeria, but you're talking as if there's a conversation that's being had about it, right, within Nigeria. This conversation is not being had. This conversation is being had amongst black and POC people within the UK, right? Because we are the children of, we are the diaspora who are affected by XYZ that the empire did.
Yeah.
But it's not a conversation that's being had in British mainstream society. In fact, Britain hasn't reconciled with the history of empire. When the conservative government came back into power, they wanted to change the history curriculum so that empire was promoted, as in it was, we should be proud of what we've done.
Mm.
So for me to say, to compare it to something where in Nigeria they're saying, well, we're not sure about this, this might be wrong, and there are voices, competing voices, that's fair enough. But this is something that people are proud of, their empire, of the empire in this country, to be brutally honest. Like, there hasn't been an apology. There hasn't been any kind of, like, you know, a nuanced view where we say empire did some okay things, but also did some terrible things. It's basically theft and armed robbery on a mass scale.
So let's say the Queen was listening to Tekish.
Shout out, Lizzie.
Shout
out, Lizzie. Shout What's going on, Lizzie? What are you saying?
What's up? And she was like, okay, I want to do something about this. I want a title that people aspire to regardless of their background. What is something we can say?
A title change would be helpful. It would if it was something that was more, I hate to use the word, but more inclusive, then fair enough.
I also think the point you're making is a really solid one. Like, can we have an open discourse around the legacy of the empire? I mean, Reni Eddo-Lodge made a wonderful contribution to this debate when she published Why I No Longer Talk to White People About Race.
I've got the book in my bag, actually.
But the onus shouldn't be on these individual thought leaders. You know, I mentioned her, but there are dozens of other people doing this. Mm. Most of them are women or people of color. You know, maybe we do need to keep this debate going and bring it to a wider audience around the curriculum, around, you know, pop culture, around the media. And, like, you know, what are we talking about? And are we educating ourselves and being on the same page about this?
I think it's hard. I think countries are built upon stories. Nations are kept together by stories. And it's hard for people to acknowledge that what bounds this nation is a lot of evil. They can't. Who wants to acknowledge that?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Nobody wants to acknowledge that. That's a hard thing to swallow. I mean, if you look at, it's not comparable, obviously, but if you look at in Germany, for example, their recent history, they seem to have kind of acknowledged it and got over it, right? Mm-hmm. There are certain things that you just can't say or do in Germany anymore, right? And we haven't, that conversation is just not had, it's shut down completely. And we're told to be proud of it. And we're told that we have to have titles with it in its name, and we should be happy to have it. I'm throwing all this out here. I haven't got a hard or fast answer, because I also understand, you know, my mum would love it. If I was to be like, mumsy would be so proud. Like, she came as an immigrant and now her child is here at the pinnacle of British society.
Yeah.
She came as a refugee. Mm. Like, this is not a joke. Like, I understand. I would find it, that's why I would find it so hard pressed to turn it down.
Mm. Mm.
It's difficult.
It is really hard. One thing that I'll say on this, which kind of links into London Tech Week, which I wanted to talk about really briefly, was one of the things that I think makes it difficult to have a conversation about this, and I'm speaking specifically about UK, you know, pop culture, general society, is that unlike the US, where people banned the word racism and racist around quite a lot, Islamophobia, etc., in the UK, we actually find it really, really difficult to label discrimination and call it what it is. Mm. So in London Tech Week last week, where I was fortunate to attend events like, you know, Cogex, the big AI festival, Startup Grind, there were a lot of conversations around diversity, a lot of panels around, you know, what are we doing to make tech teams representative of their customers, et cetera.
Mm.
But as one person pointed out, the word diversity is said a lot. And the point that I made was because it's easier to say diversity than to say homophobia or transphobia or Islamophobia or classism, racism, sexism.
Yeah.
And I think until we as a, you know, society here in the UK can become comfortable with naming discrimination and basically just calling it what it is, like stop pussyfooting around it, it will be hard to have these conversations and we will remain polarized on these topics.
Hear, hear. I think we'll leave it on that. Story that we talked about before, a very notorious company and a very notorious founder now, unfortunately, Theranos and Elizabeth Holmes. So to give you the quick backstory, if you haven't listened to any of the previous Tech-ish episodes, Elizabeth Holmes was a 19-year-old dropout from Stanford, and she claimed that she had invented a device that would take a small prick of blood on your finger and would be able to give you really deep-seated blood work analysis that would be comparable to using a lot of blood, essentially. I've described it wrong, but you get the gist of it. It turned out that her device didn't do what she claimed it could do. It turned out that there was a lot of fraud and deception, that they were actually just using off-the-shelf devices and trying their best to kind of hide the fact that their technology didn't work.
They
were faking demos. They got to a $9 billion valuation at one point. They had partnerships with Walgreens. And now they're facing a civil suit, and now they're also facing criminal charges. She's facing up to several years in jail, actually.
Yeah.
Decades in jail. She's not allowed to be a CEO for like 10 years based off the civil charges as well. And the last time we talked about this, we basically said this is the danger of hyping up founders too soon and the culture of celebrating entrepreneurship to the point of deification. Now the chickens have come home to roost. It's the, it looks like she may very well go to jail, and it's, I've never seen such a, I was going to say rags to riches, riches to rags in such a short period of time. Like, literally, she was being thrusted as the, you know, female self-made billionaire.
Yes.
And that was jail time.
It's really interesting because is she the most fraudulent tech founder in recent history? Probably not.
Who would you say?
Mark Zuckerberg.
I think Mark, yeah, and you can make that argument. Mark Zuckerberg is fraudulent in the sense that he sold his product, the benefits of his product, as, you know, connecting, everybody's connected together, and friendship. But actually, studies have shown that Facebook leads to depression. Actually, this is, and even Facebook scientists have come out and acknowledged that it leads to depression, like increase in teenage suicide. And, you know,
Mark Zuckerberg's kids probably are not on Facebook and will never be.
Yeah, and say bye-bye to democracy and elections because, you know, hey presto, it's going to get hacked by the Russians.
Yeah.
So I think that's more of, he has completely missold the benefits of his products. This is actually, my opinion, much worse because...
What about Juicero?
What's that one?
Juicero.
Oh, Juicero, the juice machine.
Also faked its proprietary technology.
I think the faking your technology when you're working within the medical realm, to me, it's a whole nother ballpark.
Right.
Because Theranos literally was like working with doctors and giving them like false blood work.
Yeah, okay.
People are like... are waiting for HIV results here.
Yeah.
And like AIDS blood tests and you're fucking around like that. Yeah. Like we talked about it last time again, but this whole fake it till you make it culture, it can work in software. If you are building a product where, you know, you need to build an MVP and you need a landing page, I've done this before and the product isn't really built or fully fleshed out. Yeah, you can do that with software. You can't do that with medical stuff. You just can't do that in hardware and medical devices. And I honestly think she needs to be thrown in jail and locked away the key for a long time as a lesson to other entrepreneurs. It saddens me that it's like, you know, it was such a like a heartwarming story about a woman entrepreneur killing it, like and going so far and raising so much money and bursting down the doors, but it can't be accepted like what she's done.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. People shouldn't, you know, especially when it comes to personal data like this, be messing around. It's a shame because, like you said, there was a time when she was literally the superstar and all of that was just house of cards, like built on lies. You know, when we spoke about it before, we spoke about the due diligence of her investors and, you know, what went wrong. So I just want to know what is being done to prevent it from happening again beyond just punishing her.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think anything has been done. I sincerely doubt there'll be anything but superficial changes. I don't think this has affected Silicon Valley at all. I haven't heard much conversation about what does this mean about Silicon Valley and the culture of Silicon Valley. All I've heard is what a bad person she is and, you know, how terrible was it. I think, interestingly enough, like a lot of the board members were like ex-military and she had like a really high-profile lawyer that was involved in some other really high-profile case. I think the Enron case. Some really high-profile lawyer.
Wow.
So... she wasn't really, the argument that has been made is that she was very much protected away from the Silicon Valley world. Like she didn't have like tech people on her board. And whenever she did raise investment, she wouldn't show people the tech.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the defense that everybody's throwing out there. I don't think it's good enough personally.
Because I was going to say, I'm not going to invest in something if I haven't seen how it works.
Yeah, but I think people are also very much like afraid of missing out on opportunities.
Good point.
So if you see a big VC firm invest, you're like, well, I've got to invest and I've got to throw money in at this valuation because otherwise we're going to miss out on the next, you know, the next big Facebook or Google or whatnot. So the next story is about Snapchat. They've partnered with SeatGeek to sell tickets within the application. And you know what? I'm going to sound like an old fogey. I don't have Snapchat. I don't use Snapchat anymore. I haven't used it since the day that Instagram put in Instagram stories.
You're joking.
I'm the least qualified person to talk about this app. All I know is that the share price is tanked and the profits are non-existent.
Yeah.
So you talk about Snapchat. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting watching Snapchat pivot. It's a bit like a fish that's landed on dry land, like floundering around. Like, I feel like every month there's some kind of new feature or a partnership or a revenue stream being launched. Will Snapchat be able to capture the audience of, like, you know, preteens and teens who are fleeing Facebook, and also, like, basically have multiple social media apps, right? I don't believe it's a winner-takes-all game. I think you can be on Instagram and be on Snapchat, use them in different ways. Even as a millennial, you know, I mean, I feel old, but I'm still communicating with one person across five different platforms, Messenger, WhatsApp, whatever. So, I don't think Snapchat is dead yet. And I think, if anything, they just IPO'd too soon, and that's what everyone says. Everyone says they don't have a sustainable business model. Mm-hmm. They're not profitable. Mm-hmm. The glass is lost. Loads of money. But if Snapchat were still private, we wouldn't be critiquing them in this way, because you know, they are still growing in terms of new users, and they still have very healthy daily active users in terms of numbers. It's not like they don't have an engaged audience. They have an engaged audience, and that's more than many social media platforms can say. I think it makes sense that they pivot into events in this way, or at least, like, you know, create an offering there. They're already present at most live events, and, you know, there are stories from festivals and things like that. So, so what, they're partnering with SeatGeek now, they're going to sell tickets. I think they're going to do well. And also, like, I mean, entertainment and live events is a huge market and only growing as all types of creators, you know, content makers.
So I wonder how will it work? So you think within your stories, you'll be able to kind of purchase tickets, like, to an event?
Yeah, definitely.
It's and clever integration.
By the way, unrelated, but did you notice that Messenger have launched adverts now in your Messenger inbox?
I try not to go on it, to be honest.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I have noticed that, though.
But yeah, I noticed it for the first time yesterday. I was just like, who the hell is this? And it was just like...
So... As in, it comes up as a message?
Yes.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that. That's creepy.
Like, do you remember when Gmail used to have sponsored messages in your inbox?
Yes.
At the very top?
Yes.
Facebook are now doing that with Messenger. I was just like, nah.
I'm shaking my head, but I don't know why.
Nah,
I expected a different...
Nah, man, nah, it's not cool.
And you know what? They're trying to do that on WhatsApp as well.
It's because they want to maximize... They get ad revenue based on impressions. And since fewer people are on Facebook and fewer people are on the home feed, they're like, oh, we'll just shove them into Messenger because then people have to look at them.
Yeah, actually, you do. And shady. Does it come up as a notification, though?
No, I literally opened my inbox and it was there. I don't have badge...
Do you get a notification?
I don't have badge notifications on Facebook anyway, so I'll have to turn them on and test and let you know.
And you know what? We're actually... That links into something else that we're going to talk about later, about in terms of notifications. But on Snapchat, they've opened up their API in general anyway now for, like, third-party logins, you know, where log in with Facebook and whatnot, and you can share stories on other third-party apps, and you can share your own stories. You can share things from other apps into stories, and you can share things from stories into other apps now, potentially, anyway.
That's good.
I do think... Evan Spiegel, he kind of has always wanted to make Snapchat like a walled garden, similar to the way Apple is, where the only way you can interact with Snapchat is within the app and within their products, like lenses and whatever. So I do think there is an element of, like, they're floundering. They're like, we need to try things that the public markets are going to respond to, and we need to find a way to make it work. To me, I'm still very bearish on Snap. Like, I don't think I would recommend anybody buy that stock. Like, I think in a year's time, it could literally be like $5.
What?
You've got the most focused and cutthroat CEO in the world making it his life mission to destroy Snap, taking all their features and putting it across all the top four apps. You know, WhatsApp stories, Messenger stories, Facebook stories, Instagram stories. I can't see
how. Insta have the face filters now as well.
Exactly, right. And actually, people say that Instagram stories is a better product in terms of, like, you can send a text. And someone was telling me, like, because I don't use Snapchat anymore, stories, so I can't compare the two. But, like, a lot of people say that Instagram stories is a better user experience. So,
there's more options. But
yeah,
I don't see
how it's going to work for them. And I feel sorry for Evan Spiegel to a certain extent. As much as you can feel sorry for a billionaire, don't get twisted. But, like, he actually is a product visionary. He pioneered stories. That was a great ingenuity of a feature. And they just ripped it off. Yeah. And back in the day in tech, if you ripped off someone's feature like that, you would be looked down. People were like, you're a clone. Like, you can't do that. Where's your innovation? But now...
It's just like, oh, well, whatever.
Big tech is big corporate. Big tech is corporate. Oh, these are corporations now.
That's the next Michael Moore documentary.
Notifications with Messenger, but this is something related to digital wellness. My least favorite phrase, actually. digital wellness, I think is an oxymoron.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Like, so both Apple and Android have basically, in their latest software updates, have integrated features that are meant to reduce the time, or meant to make you more aware of the time that you're spending on their devices. So Apple in iOS 12 will have a better Do Not Disturb feature and a morning screen devoid of notifications to ease you up for the day, which that is actually quite ingenious.
Yeah.
Because I bloody hate when you wake up in the morning and you just see a green, that's just screen full of messages, and you're like, oh my God, I've got to read, like, ease me up for the day. And quiet notifications that don't appear on your lock screen, blah, blah, blah. And you can set a time limit for each app. Okay. Now, this has now prompted Instagram to take it into their own hands and do similar features. They're going to apparently release time spent on app type features. And I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, in terms of Apple doing it, I get it, because Apple is basically, once Apple makes its money by selling you their devices, that's their money made, right?
Yeah.
Instagram makes its money by how long you spend on their app.
Yeah.
Potentially anyway.
Mm.
So for Instagram to put this feature in tells me that they're running, I think Facebook is slightly scared about the backlash that their products are getting and how addictive their products are.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like a drug dealer saying, I'm not going to sell you anymore, guys. Like, that's it. Like, that's too much. Like, you're going to overdose.
But couldn't it also be more like a publicity stunt versus an actual thing? Because Instagram's been designed in a way that it's, like, incredibly addictive. So, and they already have the data on how many people are spending, you know, X percent of their days on Instagram. Like, realistically, guys, listening, if you wake up and you open Insta and you're, like, commuting and you're on Insta, like, you're probably on Insta more than any other app. You're probably on Insta more than you read a book, more than you speak to your loved ones.
The book thing goes without saying. Definitely, and probably even more than your loved ones. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they've already created the crack of apps.
Yeah.
Adding in a feature to reduce the time. Ain't nobody going to switch that on. Who's going to switch that on?
Yeah, that's true. And also,
no one's going to switch it on.
But you're right, it's a PR thing. But and that's what I meant, though. They're basically trying to prevent there being some kind of self-imposed regulation. I mean, Apple kind of, it's not a governmental body, but they kind of supersede Instagram because it's their platform. So they're kind of imposing some sort of time limit, right? So Instagram is saying, let's circumvent that and get out in front and do our own one.
Yeah.
But to me, like, when your business model is keep you addicted, and even you have to acknowledge that you're too addicted, it's crazy. Like, it's absolutely crazy. Like, the drug dealer analogy is the only one I can actually think of. Like, and yeah, for example, I was on the flight recently, and when I landed, like, I could just see everybody get their phone out, Instagram. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Hell of a product they've made there.
Mm.
Like, if, let's say you had made a product that was that addictive, would you be concerned? Would you be like, money?
I'd be like, on my yacht. Like, partying with Rihanna. No. It's funny because someone just recommended the book Hooked to me, which is all about building.
Oh my Lord. That is like the products. Silicon Valley, like,
right?
What's the devil's Bible? I've forgotten it. I can't remember.
Is it Hooked?
Maybe. It could be that. But it's basically like the dark magic book of Silicon Valley that everybody recommends.
So we have this, like, horrible cognitive dissonance where we're trying to make the world a better place through the products we build, but we're equally trying to destroy people's lives. Well, I am.
You are personally bad. We say we, though, as in the industry.
No one's out there like, I'm trying to destroy the planet and get rich at the same time.
I think people are like, just like other capitalists are like, I want to make as much money as possible, and if things get effed up in the process, so, like, I don't care. It's not my business, like,
but that's like Jeff Bezos. But people see Jeff Bezos as a visionary.
They do.
But he's also just trying to make as much money as possible.
He is trying to make an insanely godly.
He's doing a very good job. He's
well done, Jeff. Like, shout out to Jeff. Like, but I mean, like, I know what you're saying. No one's intentionally setting out to do bad things. But I think once you get a level of wealth, like Zuckerberg and Jeff, you turn a blind eye to the negative externalities. I know that's a word that you like to use quite a lot. Like,
I'm an economist.
Yeah, so there we go. That your products create, you turn a blind eye to it. You see what I'm saying? So I'm genuinely surprised they've done it. And I think, to be honest, it smells of panic. I think they're like,
flip. I don't know. I feel that, you know, prevention is always better than cure. And if they really wanted to have an impact on how their technology is affecting individuals' lives, then they would completely redesign the products. Because the reality is, you know, having a red notification badge...
That's Apple's fault, though. The red notification badges. Oh, you mean within the app?
Yeah, but I'm talking about Apple. Instagram, you know, oh, so-and-so's like this, so-and-so's like that. Oh, look, you can comment on stories. You can do this. By the very design of the product, they're creating addictive behaviors and they're giving us those little dopamine hits.
Mm.
So dopamine hits. Oh, look, someone's liked your post. Ooh, someone's liked your story. Ooh, look how many people have viewed your story. I didn't make an Instagram story until I was in Nigeria. I made my very first Instagram story. And I also had recently turned notifications back on. At the end of my first story, I got a notification saying 298 people have viewed your story.
Wow.
See who's looked at it now before the story disappears. So obviously I'm like, damn, 298 people. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm fancy now.
You're popping.
So I was like, okay, opened it up. And then it's like, do you want to download this list? Do you want to upload it? Do you want to send them a message? And I was like, wow, like you're already creating more addictive behaviors for me.
Mm.
So I did, like, it seems, it's really hard for this to not feel disingenuous when I know that the design of the product is not changing. Mm. Like, you're not making it less addictive. You're not making it less.
Should there be like a mode that you could set on that would be like less addictive mode where it would
and white.
Yeah. Or maybe like less notifications, less like, you know, for example, telling you.
I think it should come with a health warning. I think it should come with a warning.
I think very well may do in the future.
I think it should be like, please note that if you spend more than 30 minutes on Instagram every day, you're more likely to feel fat, ugly, poor, and boring.
And what I said about Facebook scientists, so they came out and... so there's been multiple studies about the negative effect of social media on your mental health. But so Facebook did its own internal study, and obviously their one is slightly more glossed over. It basically said that if you spend your time on social media just perusing and looking at things and just endlessly scrolling, it has a negative effect. Mm. If you're using social media to connect with your friends and organize like real life meetups, then it can have a positive effect. But let's keep it real. Most of us are not doing that.
Of course not.
Most of us are not, like, because you can go on Facebook and be like, oh, where there are events that are near me, who's going to that event?
Can you?
Yeah, you can. There's an event tab. I've discovered actually quite a good amount of events. I think they actually should spin out an events app personally and compete with Eventbrite. That's a whole other story. Facebook, you can holler at me for consulting if you want. Anyways, yeah. So, but most of us are not. Most of us are just endlessly scrolling and just looking at, oh, look what so-and-so is doing. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
They're on holiday. I'm not on holiday. And I'm guilty of that because when I'm on holiday, I'm like, yo, look at me. I'm out here, Machu Picchu, baby. Like, yeah. You're not here. Tough luck. Like. So, like, we're all guilty of it. Mm. Obviously, and we've talked about it many times, it's the highlight reel of your life. You're constantly viewing other people's highlight reels. But anyways, yeah, maybe a less addictive mode with less notifications and
health warnings,
and just like cigarettes, perhaps. And that's probably what they're trying to preempt. They don't want that kind of external regulation, and they want to say, okay, look, we're trying to self-regulate here because the narrative about big tech has changed dramatically. The last 5 years ago, 5 years ago, it was like tech is going to save us. These are the visionaries. Google don't do no evil. Facebook is connecting the world, and now we're all kind of like, yeah, that was bullshit. Just wanted to do a quick shout out to Camille Hurst of Kit, which was a startup that was kind of like it gave you like product recommendations that certain influencers had. I might be describing it wrong. So for example, you might have a page for like Tim Ferriss and it would show all the products that he uses and it would have like affiliate links. So it was a really cool product. And as a black woman, she has, you know, achieved a successful exit, which we've got a shout out. Whoop, whoop. Give me a whoop. I'm Desi. So shout out to her, and she sold to Patreon for an undisclosed amount. Hopefully she got that coin. And yeah, just, you know, when these things happen, we've got to shout them out.
Celebrate those wins.
We gotta celebrate those wins. Yeah. Basically a little thing at the end where we talk about keys to success. You know, this is when we get on our like self-help guru hat.
Success,
you know what
I'm saying?
And also go out there and cop Dream Big, Hustle Hard. I just thought I'd throw that out. That's Avidity's book. Sequel coming soon. Watch out. Going to be some fire on the streets. So what do you want to talk about for hustle tips, Abadesi?
There was a really good viral thread that Naval Ravikant, founder of AngelList, posted all about how to get rich.
That's your boss as well, right?
Well, yeah, he's the president of my company. Shout out.
Promotion.
But it was a good thread because it was all about like how to get...
But this is dying on us. So I'll take over. It's how to get rich without getting lucky. That's the title of the thread. And it's a long Twitter thread. I recommend everybody read it. And it's literally got like 30 tweets. I don't necessarily know if we're going to go through all of them. Mm. Shall we pick out some standout ones?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
What I like about it is that all of the things are like completely attainable and understandable.
Yeah, it's very much understandable. So the first one, his first tip on how to get rich without getting lucky is seek wealth, not money or status. Wealth is having assets that earn while you sleep. Money is how we transfer time and wealth. Status is your place in social hierarchy. So he's saying it's all about wealth, not about money or status, basically. Mm. So it's about what Nipsey Hussle calls mailbox money. Getting money while you sleep.
Yeah.
You wake up in the morning, you've got 10 properties that bring in an income, or you've got a business that is working while you're sleeping. Mm. That's the key, basically, right? We kind of all know that intuitively. That's easier said than done. The next one is understand that ethical wealth creation is possible. If you secretly despise wealth, it will elude you. I'm not sure about this one.
I think what he's trying to say is like you can't hate money and want to make money.
You can't hate money. If you hate money, you're never gonna get money. Which is cool. True. If you think like this whole thing is like flawed from beginning to end, and there's like making money itself is an evil in itself,
yeah,
then yeah, no point.
One thing that I thought was quite good is like pick an industry where you can play long-term games with long-term people. There's a lot being said around our generation being really flighty and like, you know, not sticking around in one company long enough. I think it's fine to like move jobs a lot, but try not to move industries too much because your network is your net worth. And at least even if you like stay within, you know, tech, media or whatever, it's the same faces floating around, even if there are different companies, but it becomes a lot harder to do that.
Yeah.
If you're in a different industry. So I thought that was really good.
I've heard him say like in other contexts, basically, there are no close connections as well, in the sense that you're going to run into everybody again at least once. You're going to bop around thinking, oh, you know what, let me just screw this person over. I'm never going to see them again. Wrong. It could be 5 years later. It could be 10 years later. So basically be nice to people. and he says, pick business partners with high intelligence, energy, and above all, integrity. That actually is a Warren Buffett quote that he's basically parlayed into his own quote. Because basically, the characteristics of intelligence, energy, and integrity are all have to be together. Because if you have somebody who's intelligent and energetic, but they have no integrity, you've basically got a smart, hardworking crook on your team, right? Each one without the other is not going to work, basically. Mm. If you've got an intelligent person who's got integrity but with low energy, you're going to have a lazy person working for you, et cetera, et cetera.
I also like this, there are no get-rich-quick schemes. That's just someone else getting rich off of you.
Yeah, that's real talk. Except for my ebook course at 900. I'm playing, yeah, that's absolutely spot on. Yeah, there are no get-rich-quick schemes. And you'd be amazed like how many people fall for it. Like, I mean, when I was younger, like after my first undergraduate degree, like I knew some dude like who I have a lot of love for, but he would always go to these like seminars that were really seedy, and it would be such it'd always be an upsell.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, the first person that runs to the stage gets, you know, this book that is like normally £1,000. Yeah. But it's like this time it's only £30, and you're like, oh my god, I'm like, bro, like, you know, none of this is real, like, do you know what I mean? So has to be said, there are no get-rich-quick schemes. Any other standout ones?
I just want people to read the whole thread. I mean, it's really good. Some of them are definitely, like, way better than others. But also this idea of, like, you know, owning equity because equity creates wealth. I know what you're thinking. You're like, oh, my God, but I'm broke. I'm still paying off my loans. I don't have money for savings. I'm trying to get my ass to Burning Man or, like, whatever. Like, the truth is, like, you can start creating equity with a very small sum. Like, most of us here in the UK, for example, we have, like, ISAs. You can get, like, lifetime ISAs where the government will, like, pay money into it on your behalf. Mm. People listening in other countries, like, there are always options for you to invest beyond a standard savings account. For most of us, interest rates are super low at the moment. Mm. Like, just go on personal finance blogs. Like, Bola Sol has an incredible one, Refined Currency. There's Vestpod, which is, like, making investment easy for women. There are so many money-saving experts. Like, the list goes on. Mm. There are really small ways you can start putting your money to work. And I'm not talking about crypto and all that kind of stuff. Although, obviously, if you have researched that, then that is, like, one option. But, you know, there's, like, there are bonds, there are shares, there's everything. Like, just try and, like, look, £5 a month or $5 a month over a year becomes, you know, 60. And then over the next year,
compounding interest, baby.
And, like, exactly. When you think of compounding interest, it really does grow over time. So no sum of money is too small, even at the very least if you're just learning about it.
Okay, here's a controversial one I want to ask you. I think it's the final tweet, actually. There is no skill called business. Avoid business magazines and business classes. What do you think?
Hmm. Interesting.
And I'm someone who has my undergraduate degree was business with law. I had a lot of business classes, but I want to get your opinion.
I think what he's trying to say there is that you can't necessarily become a business specialist because business is like a composite of lots of different skills, like product and, you know, marketing, growth, operations. So because earlier in the thread, he talks a lot about personal branding and stuff like that. What he's probably trying to say is like, it's a lot more valuable for you to like focus on what your skills are, like where you can add value and build a network within an industry than focus on trying to become a business expert. He also talks a lot about like learning to sell and how selling is really valuable, selling and building. So, you know, don't invest in a business course, just invest in a sales course or a building course. Did I say that right? Don't invest in a business course. So I probably do agree with him. I mean, I studied economics, which is really closely linked to business. But
I mean, the next tweet says study microeconomics, game theory, psychology, persuasion, ethics, mathematics, and computers.
Yeah.
So I think...
I think also, like, you know, this is just one person's view of the world. And
obviously, yeah.
He's really, really rich and he's got rich through tech. So he's speaking based on his own experiences to a similar audience.
Yeah. Absolutely. You're right. I mean, there is no one set way, but... it's fun just for the sake of argument just to dissect what he's saying, like, take everything with a pinch of salt. Like, actually, I like this last one. And when you're finally wealthy, you'll realize that it wasn't what you were seeking in the first place, but that's for another day.
Yeah, of course it isn't, because like humans are really crap at feeling fulfilled. But hey, that's cool. We've always been like that for thousands of years. Hey, Naval, if it isn't what you expected it to be, I'm here to take it off your hands. Relieve the load.
Abba can help.
Yeah,
Abba can help. We'll take the stress off your hands.
I will share our Amazon wish list at the end of this.
Yeah.
Let's make a Turkish wish list.
Yeah, link at the bottom, Naval, if you want to.
And anyone else who's listening.
If we have any other rich listeners. Cool, man. I think we'll leave it at that. It's a fun little list. And it's been a fun little season 2 startup.
Yeah, thanks for listening. I look forward to returning with my full voice.
Yeah. Get well soon. How about everybody send your get well soon wishes to her?
Thank you. If you haven't left us a review yet.
Yeah, I'll take over because Abba's voice is struggling right now. If you haven't left us a review on iTunes, please do that. Don't just be like an idle listener. Please like help us out. It really helps. And use the hashtag techish. And just like give us your thoughts, your opinions on anything that we have or haven't said, and send us an email. We've got an email there if you've got any queries that you need to send in private or any questions that you want us to answer in a future episode. And we'll catch you next week. Ciao.
Bye.